I hope all of you have had an enjoyable afternoon. It's been a pretty afternoon for those of you that didn't sleep it away. We have one final thing to do as far as introduction to this book is concerned, the book of Revelation. We started last Sunday evening on the 24th chapter of the book of Matthew. And I believe that in order to understand the book of Revelation, you need to understand Matthew chapter 24. If you would, in your reading, go back to the last part of chapter 23 of the book of Matthew. And beginning in verse 27 or 37 of that chapter it is, you will find Jesus telling Jerusalem, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou that killest the prophets, how often would I have gathered you together as a chicken does her brood, but you would not. And because you won't, these terrible things are about to fall on you. This is what Jesus is telling them. And after he has announced that there will not be one stone left standing, his disciples have come and asked him, this is down in about verse 3 of chapter 24, Lord, when will these signs be? When will you come? And when will the end of the world come? So two separate questions are asked. Now with that said, we're going to cover real quickly by review the things we talked about last Sunday in the 24th chapter. And if you'll get there quickly, we'll go through these things. First of all, Jesus says in verse 5 of Matthew that false teachers are going to spring up everywhere. And they will be leading away disciples. Now, two things tell us that these things happened. Titus, one of the historians, tells us that prior to the destruction of Jerusalem, there were many false prophets, even those who were saying Christ is coming or they are Christ, and so many that they might lead away disciples from the faith. Acts chapter 8, many of you are familiar with the statement when Peter was preaching and Simon had been converted, Simon the sorcerer, and he wanted to buy the gift of the Holy Spirit. He already had those magical powers that Satan had given, causing people to deceive many. So these are the times that Jesus is speaking about, that these are the signs of the things that will happen before the end of this time. Wars and rumors of wars. And as we mentioned last time, with Jerusalem and prior to Jerusalem and certainly during that time, the nations that had been conquered by the Roman Empire were coming to do battle against Rome. And they were talking about it, they were spreading it, and this is what historians tell us happened during this time, that there were wars and rumors of wars up until the time that Jerusalem was destroyed. So what I'm trying to get you to see is that as we look at what is written in Matthew chapter 24, he is not talking about the end of time, but he's showing us that some horrible things are going to happen, and then something better is going to happen. And I would have you for just a minute take your mind back to the very beginning of time, when the first prophecy is made in the Old Testament in Genesis chapter 23, the prophecy about Christ. If you remember, he tells us there that there would be this battle. And there would be a battle between Satan and against woman, against her seed and his seed, predicting the timing of the coming of Christ. But remember that this prophecy was made because man had fallen from his sinless state. And so gloom and doom had fallen upon the human race. But if you read the Bible, here's what you will see. Every time evil triumphs, every time tragedy befalls mankind, God steps in to tell you it's going to be better. I'm going to take care of this. I will give you hope. I will give you rest. You come walk with me. And this is the theme of Matthew 24 and of the book of Revelation. You walk with God, you hold to His unchanging hand, and victory will be yours. Then we noticed in verse 7, he talks that there shall be nations shall rise up against nation, kingdoms against kingdom, and there shall be famine, pestilence, earthquakes in divers places, many places. It is recorded in those days, during the days of Claudius Caesar, that there were many earthquakes in the land. And Matthew 24 simply confirms what Agabus says, recorded by Luke in Acts 11, verse 28. And that verse reads as follows. And there stood one among them named Agabus, and signified by the Spirit that there would be great dread throughout all the world, which came to pass in the days of Claudius Caesar. How much plainer could the Bible be than to tell us that these are not some far future things, but the Bible is talking about things that these people would live through. In verse 8, and these are the beginnings of sorrows. There were great earthquakes, as we mentioned last time, during the days of Nero. Josephus records that some of them were so bad that they destroyed entire cities throughout Asia Minor. Then we read in verse 9, and he shall deliver some to death. Quickly, name me some disciples written about in the New Testament who were put to death because of their faith before the destruction of Jerusalem.
John?
Stephen. Anybody else? What about Peter?
When was Peter? I didn't know what day this was.
How about James? And James the Less. All of them were put to death for their faith. Now, they are only symbolic of many of the early Christians who endured this persecution. So he says that there would come these times of sorrow, and many of them would be delivered up to death. Of course, Paul was more involved in what? We know him more for
missionary
work. Well, we know, but I'm talking about in this setting, we know Paul more for...
He was crucified.
He was the one causing other Christians to die, wasn't he? Even though he later himself was put to death. All right, then in verse 10... And then shall many be offended. And I hate to do this, I've got to use my glasses today. And shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. What do you think this is talking about? Well, even Josephus, who, as we have noticed, the greatest historian of this time, who was himself an unbeliever, he rejected the deity of Jesus. He said that everywhere there were those who were selling each other out in their faith. Several years ago, one of my middle child, they went to do mission work in Rwanda. Any of you know anything about Rwanda? If you haven't, a very interesting country. You heard of the genocide, I'm sure. When the armies started turning people loose to kill in this country, many of the people who were fearing for their lives ran to what were then church buildings of Catholicism. And there, they were welcomed into the buildings. But once the buildings were full, the priest would go outside and lock the buildings. And then they would go and tell the soldiers where the people were. And to this day, many of those buildings that have been bombed and torn down, they keep every year to preserve them as much as they can, like they were. Corpses were left and they were constantly covered over with lime to show the horrible things that happened. Now, can you imagine somebody professing to be a religious leader doing something like that to people? Well, think about it. As a Christian in the first century, can you imagine these people now? They didn't meet on Sunday mornings like we do, right? Where'd they meet? Why were they meeting in houses?
So they could stay hid.
To stay hid. For fear of being put to death. Okay? Now, let's suppose that you had one of these places where you met in secret and you came to worship. And one of the ones who was a part of your congregation was out doing what Judas did, selling the rest of you into persecution. This is what he's talking about. And this was quite common at this particular time. Now,
didn't back in that time, isn't that where the, the Christians made the sign that kind of looks like a fish? It was kind of a code sign. Christian, is that where that got started?
Yes.
Right at this point?
That's what I'm told, yeah. From the best I'm able to read. That if you wore that sign, that was a sign that you were trying to be genuine and not selling anybody into slavery or into death. All right, now he says, look in verse 14. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations. Then what's going to come?
The end will come.
The end will come. All right. The end of the world? No. The end of this time. The end of the fall of Jerusalem. The end of Judaism. The end of the Sanhedrin's way of doing things. Look in Romans 10, verse 15. Somebody read that verse for us right quick. I'm going to have to get y'all faster on finding things.
How then shall they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how shall they believe in him on whom they have not heard? And how shall they hear without a preacher?
All right. What had Jesus sent his disciples to do?
Preach.
Into all the world, right? All right. Listen to this verse. This is a writing of Paul in Colossians 1:23. If you continue in the faith, grounded and settled, and be not moved away from the hope of the gospel, which ye have heard, and which was preached to every creature which is under heaven. For I, Paul, am made a minister of this gospel. All right, according to Paul, did the church in the first century meet the Great Commission?
Yes.
They had taken it to every creature. Question. Do you know places today where the gospel is not heralded? Why? Got an answer? Too many people, right?
Because they forgot the generation was lost over the generation.
Well, but what I'm saying is, today, if there are countries today where the gospel is not being preached, Paul and them, in his day, how did they go preaching?
By foot.
By foot.
By boat.
By camel. By donkey. Yeah. Or by boat. Okay? And we go
by plane.
Cars.
Internet.
Television. Radio. You know, and I'm not criticizing anybody when I say this, but it disturbs me a little bit. Understand, when we talked a couple of weeks ago about where we are in looking at a Spanish work in an area that probably covers 10,000 Hispanic-speaking people, And we're doing so little to reach that segment of our society. Now, from our standpoint, okay, tell me if I'm right. How many of you want to live in a world with better schools? Less violence. Murder, rape, on and on we can go. You want to live in a world where God is more respected?
Yes.
Okay. So the way to do that is to find a way to keep people who do not believe in Jesus out of our world, right?
No.
No, sir?
No.
Well, how do we do it?
We teach.
We preach the truth. We challenge people to come to Jesus. Okay? So, you want better people? I hope all of us in this area are praying that we'll take seriously this opportunity that has come to us to proclaim that gospel to this segment of our society, that if they're taught the gospel, we'll make better citizens of our nation and better citizens of the kingdom.
We have to keep in mind the scripture that talks about, it's a parable of the three types of land where the seed is planted. Some will fall on like rock and won't take root. Some will fall between the cracks where it does take root and it chokes out. And some falls in the fertile land.
And which brings me back to what Mickey mentioned here. It is a tragedy that Paul says in Romans chapter 1, there was a time when every nation under heaven knew God, but some chose not to maintain him in their knowledge. Okay. It's real easy for some of us to look. No, let me rephrase that. Some people seem to find it easy to look at the world in which we live in today and say, well, if people don't know God, it's their fault. Okay. Even if it's their fault, if we leave people untaught, we leave the world a worse place for our children, our grandchildren, and for people yet unborn. So if we don't spread the gospel every opportunity we have, we're going to pay and continue to pay a tragedy for that.
That's what happened with our society today. I mean, because we're not spreading the gospel. We're spreading it everywhere else but here in the United States. And it's generations that comes up that's not taught, what to do or how to act. I know you've been church talking to us about that at the church, apparently in the mornings about, how we can do better.
Now notice what he says here. After these things, and we've concluded the gospel was heralded throughout all the known world at that time. Then he says what's going to come. Verse 14, the end shall come. Okay? The end of what?
Judaism.
The end of Judaism. The end of Jerusalem. The end of the Sanhedrin authority. The great enemy of Christianity. All right? Then look at verse 15. When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel, the prophet stand in the holy place, whosoever readeth, let him understand. All right. Do you like that reading? It kind of has a ring to it. The abomination of desolation. What does that mean? Well, my millennialist friends tell me that he's talking about the end of time when the great battle is fought just before the end of time. But the real message here is, and again we go to history. When we talked about the Roman general coming in the first time to lay siege against Jerusalem, and he divided the city in half, one of the things he took and occupied at that time was the temple. Now by taking the temple, what did he do?
He thought that he would stop him. By taking the temple, he thought that he would stop him
Okay, but what did he do? What?
He took God's house.
Huh?
He took God's house.
Okay, and when he did that, think what it did to the Jewish people.
Killed them around.
Made them afraid. If Jerusalem, if the temple can fall,
the rest of us are doomed.
I want to ask you, how many of you spent much of your life believing that you would live and die without ever seeing a foreign entity declare war physically in our world, in our nation? Did you? So if you were like me, and you got up one morning and turned on the TV, and you saw 911, you know what I first thought? I had turned on a movie. This is some future movie. Okay? But it wasn't, it was reality. All right. Did that dishearten people in America? Did it scare you? Sure, okay, y'all always want to get ahead of me now. Yes, for a little while. But it did.
Scared the churches for
you. Ah. The Sunday after 9/11, we had 132 extra people. Yes, they only stayed about 6 weeks. But for a minute, people realized they had a great need. Right? Okay. So here are the Jewish people. You can't even understand how devastated they were. But remember what he's telling us here. What were they looking for?
An earthly kingdom.
Hmm?
Earthly
Okay.
They were looking for an earthly kingdom.
Well, what, back in verse 15, what's he telling us? When you see what Daniel had already told you about, when you see this coming to pass, what were they supposed to do? Get out. Flee. Okay? Because the end is at hand. Okay? Now, here's what I want you to take away this evening. Don't miss this point. We say quite often, God is good, God is merciful, God is gracious, He is kind. All right. Now, how many times will God warn people before the warning fails and reality sets in?
That's
a
choice.
Huh?
That's His choice.
But in every case, I'm not saying the end of time now. I'm saying if you go back through the Bible, how many times did God warn His people of bad things that would come to pass if they didn't do right?
Just look at all the prophets they were.
Did the kingdom of Israel get carried away into Assyrian captivity without any warning?
No.
Did the kingdom of Judah go away into Babylonian captivity without warning? No. They were warned over and over again. And if you remember, Isaiah and others were telling them, in Judah especially, look at what happened to your sister. Look at what God did to Israel. Why won't you wake up? And I can't help but wonder how many times today God is warning us. Wake up. See and smell the roses. Okay? Now look at how God worked. He tells them, when you see this, in Matthew 24, verse 15, when you see this abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel. Now, wait a minute. Where were they going to stand? In that verse. Where?
Holy place.
In the holy place. Where was the holy place? Okay, here's what history tells us. That when the great general divided the city and took the temple, they took out everything within the temple that pertained to the worship of God. And in its place, they brought in symbols and signs of the pagan gods and of Rome as Caesar being the one to worship. So this is what Jesus is saying. When you see this abomination, this desolation of the holy place, get out of there. Okay? Have you ever seen things happen today that just make you wonder how far men will go away from God? So this is what he's talking about. When you see this abomination of desolation, when you see them take the temple, the holy place, and they take all the things that refer to God and they replace them with the things that apply to the foreign gods and to Caesar himself as the one to worship, then get out, for the end is at hand. Now, once again, Josephus refers to this as an unbeliever, and here's what Josephus will say. For some unexplainable reason, beyond my ability to understand, the Roman army, who had Jerusalem on its knees, packed up and left. Why? Why?
So they have time to escape.
Man didn't know why. But we read in Zechariah 14, God was fighting his battle. Do you think today we ever underestimate the power of God in our lives?
Yes.
Or in the church?
Yes.
What would God do? How do I say this kindly to us? If we were all truly converted, what do you think God would do?
Well, he'd do somersaults.
He's bringing us home.
Huh?
If everybody was converted, it'd be time to bring us home.
Yeah,
well, I'm talking about today. Remember what he told John in John 6, or Peter in John 6? When you are converted, what was Peter to do? Feed my sheep. You think, again, I say this kindly, if we were truly converted, you think we'd lose our young people? You think if we were truly converted, the world would know it?
Yes.
You think lost men who are hungry for salvation would see it? Okay. So, here they were, and they fled. Can you imagine, even the Christians, how deflated they were when they left Jerusalem to flee into the mountains, having no idea what was going to happen or what would take place? So listen now to what he says. Sometime later, the general who had pulled them out of the city was replaced by Titus. And listen to verse 19 through 22. But woe to those who are with child, and to those who are nursing babies in those days. And pray that your flight may not be in the winter or on the Sabbath. For then shall be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world, nor shall ever be. All right. What did Jesus say? What did he tell them? I did read those verses, didn't I?
This is a bad deal.
Christianity had arrived.
Huh?
Arrived.
Well, but what's he saying here?
Those that don't take heed and plan to leave and get out, they're going to pay the price.
Okay. But understand now, these people, the Christians, He says, when you see these signs, get out. When they saw those signs, you know what the Bible says? They were not to get on the housetop and get all ready. They were not to go in the house and pack their bags. What were they to do? All right. Can you imagine if it was in the winter and they had to flee to the mountains with no food, no extra clothes, and a lady was expecting a child or she was nursing a baby? You think there was uncertainty?
Yes.
Worry? What's going to happen? What I want you to think about is this. Did they do this?
Yes.
As far as we can tell, very few exceptions to people who profess to be Christians who did not get out of the city of Jerusalem. At least once, Christians listened to what God had told them. Now, suppose today that there was great tribulation. How many people do you think would be like the Christians of that day as opposed to the wife of Lot? Is that a fair question? You know what happened to Lot's wife, right? Okay. Now, if today some tribulation similar to this happened, and we knew that to be safe, we had to go hide, how many people would say, oh, I've got children who are not saved. I've got loved ones who are lost. I got to go tend to them before I flee. You think that that wasn't true in this day? Now, my point is this. In every time in history, when is the time for us to be concerned about those who are lost? Today. Today. Tomorrow may be too late. Okay? We'll tell you several, but three in particular. People that I knew, I had known for quite a while, I had studied with them, I had prayed with them. They knew the gospel. They knew what they needed to do to be Christians. And they kept telling me, I don't know what's keeping me from making this decision. And when you stand before a casket of a person like that, it is devastating. What do you say? Do you say, well, he knew the truth? No, you don't want to say that at a funeral. But how tragic. Okay? So these people took the warning and got out. Now, when he says, this persecution, this tribulation shall be worse than anything that has ever happened before, or anything that will ever happen again. Wow. How bad is that? You've seen some bad things? You know anybody that's ever been in one of the world wars? Vietnam? Seen some horrible things. Right? You know, when you think about it, a lot of people pass over some things. Any of you hear last week about what went on that some people related to sports? Or one of the owners of the NFL?
Yeah.
What was he involved in? And don't give me the details here. What?
Prostitute.
Well, but the worst thing. Human trafficking. Can you imagine? We don't like to think about that in our country, do we? We don't like to think about, really? This is going on? But we have an epidemic in our own country. These young ladies were coming over from another country. Do you know how many thousands of young women in this country every year are taken and sold into other countries? Horrible things. But Jesus said, you ain't never seen anything like what I'm telling you about, and you'll never see it again. So I'm going to tell you this. When I think of my kids and my grandkids, I take this verse and I hold on to it as a sign that, thankfully, it'll never be this bad. They'll never see anything as bad as what Jesus was describing. All right. The siege started August the 10th in AD 70 and lasted approximately 2 months. In 2 months, Jerusalem saw 1,100,000 people die. How many people does it take for us in our country to die in one setting for us to call this horrible? 1,100,000 people died in a period of 2 months. And here's how they died. Starvation. Packs of young, healthy men running through the woods or through the streets of the town, finding older people who might be by themselves or only two, and they would pounce upon those in packs, and they would literally eat the flesh off of them while they were alive. Bad? But as I said earlier, can you imagine a mother giving birth to a child and turning around and consuming her own child? What happened to these people? What happened to them? You got an answer? Let me give you a verse to put with Matthew 24, and don't ever forget this. Do you remember when the Bible tells us, Paul, in the book of Ephesians, says, don't you live like those who have what?
No hope.
No hope. You think they had lost hope? Could you, for a minute, fathom yourself doing any of these horrible things to another human being? Once again, there's the motivation for us to remain faithful to the Lord and proclaim His gospel. All right?
Back before that, it kind of reminds me of the story in the Old Testament about the rudder, the two women that were fighting over a child. And the rudder said, bring me the child, I'll just split it in half.
Yeah. That's what Solomon's answer was, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Here, let me read this from Josephus. Every building was filled with the perishing bodies. Famished people ate the purified flesh of human carcasses. Mothers ate the flesh of their own babies. And outside the besieged city, the families, those of Jewish background, found themselves in places throughout the empire where they were slaughtered. Bad times. Bad times. There will never be anything in the world like this. There will only be one thing that will ever be worse than this. You know what it is?
Tears from death.
And what does the Bible tell us? There will come a day when we'll all stand before the judgment throne. And He'll turn to those on this hand and He will say, depart from me. I never knew you. Now, just for a minute. How many of you want to spend eternity with people who committed these horrible acts? Count me out. I don't want to be around those people for eternity, do you? But when we lose our commitment to the Lord, it's not just us that suffer. It's our children, our grandchildren, and as we said, generations yet unborn, if the world stands. All right, we're going to close there for today. And we'll take up there next time, Lord willing. I'm trying hard to finish Matthew 24 so y'all can bring me all the questions y'all have written.